Welcome to the inaugural show zero of the Babylon podcast. My name is Summer Brooks.
I'm going to put that on and go into the spot factory and get to work.
My dog and I are being attacked by a duck.
I think I'm kidding, but I'm not.
When you're hungry, you're hungry.
The virgin sits on a crate, opening and closing his pipe.
Stuff has a mind of its own tonight.
I didn't get any entries at all.
Telepaths against mundanes is no contest.
I like Day of the Dead.
I did too.
Hey guys, it's Gary. I'm listening to episode 1.
And God help us all, this is Joe Truman.
Production of the Malt Liquor Beverage Zima.
Nice and close, and I looked at him like, oh, do you want?
Hey there. Okay, I'm... Actually, let me call you back in a minute. Bye.
Stella, I knew it was a bad idea to record. I knew it was.
Oh, yes. Feedback yet again.
Yes. Yes. And just to spend another week to kind of discussing this, one of the things that I really find very interesting to look at, I'm looking through artifacts from the Beyond the Rim, there are interspersed throughout a variety of photos. One is of a Centauri telepath embryo floating in a Vorlon genetic engineering facility, which is an interesting thing. But these shots, these behind-the-scenes shots of the actors being worked on or the sets being worked on by production people. And here you've got – it's like here's a picture of Londo and somebody's touching up his hair and his uniform and you know, his coat and everything. And the guy doing it has got like this mullet. It's this bizarre sort of juxtaposition of realities.
Okay.
I find it amusing.
Alrighty then.
You know, here's another one of Walter Koenig preparing for a scene in Mind War, and he's got this very, you know, it's obviously going inside of himself to prepare for the scene, and then there's this guy in a soft cap glasses and this ZZ Top beard moving a fan around. You know, it's just like... ignore that man behind the curtain kind of thing. Anyway.
Yeah, I still haven't gone through all of this. It'll take
I haven't either. No, it's going to take weeks.
Ages. So, anyway, yes.
Well, one other thing before we go to a break and then get ready to go to do a... Feedbackapalooza part due. I was looking for this email and I couldn't find it specifically. But, yeah, here we go. This comes to us from Andy. Andrew Havens, in fact. He says, I was reading the comic book resources website and they had a report of JMS at the New York Comic Con. During the question and answer, he said, I said to Warner Brothers a while back, when you're ready to do something real with Babylon 5, either a big budget film or a TV show, if you want to do one of those two things, call me. Otherwise, don't bother me. About a month ago, the phone rang. I don't know where this is going to go yet, but when they call you, there's something going on. I can't tell you what it is yet, and it may not go anywhere, but there is movement in the tall grass. So,
Warner Brothers, stop teasing me.
You know, take that for what it's worth.
Hey, somebody at Warner's made the call to him. That means that they are considering spending the money, which is a long, long, great, big, positive step away from where it's been for a while.
Yes.
So I consider that. Since no announcement's been made, they're teasing me.
Yeah, well.
Or it could be foreplay. I don't know.
I don't know. Insert obligatory Lensman script comment here. So since we've got lots of feedback to get to, Summer, why don't we go ahead and take a quick break and then launch right into it.
So, you're still hanging on to that tiny thread of denial, trying to convince yourself that sci-fi has nothing whatsoever to do with your life. Well, you better think again, Sparky. That tiny cell phone has no basis in Starfleet communicators. Those hands-free earpieces now used by virtually everybody didn't come down from the ear of Lieutenant Uhura. And that cute little Rumba vacuum cleaner that you use far too infrequently wasn't hijacked off an Imperial Star Cruiser. Nah, not a chance. Because if it were true, then you would be forced to turn on that Flash Gordon-inspired box on your desk called a computer and listen to SliceOfSciFi.com, the podcast and XM satellite radio show that will turn your sci-fi into reality.
Yes, now I'm going to have to check with the chat room to see who had the over-under on when you were going to mention Lensman.
I didn't. I just said insert your obligatory Lensman comment there. I didn't. Okay, then maybe I did.
Yes. Yeah, you did. All if right. you mention, if you say the word Lensm, you've mentioned it.
But he made you go there.
Yes.
JMS.
Yes. Keep telling yourself that.
Joe, call me. We need to have a conversation. All right. Well, without further Lensman ado, Mike, roll the first one, please.
This is Neil approaching the New Jersey Turnpike now, going north. And just heard Edmund's voicemail in the show 212 about the Babylon 5 creation myth. And then Tim echoing John from Jersey's thought about that it went from the 10-year to 5 years, possibly during the first, towards the end of the first year. But I guess one thing which might contradict that was what JMS has posted numerous times, that he always did want the it as 5 years. So I mean, maybe not always there, but the thing that was going to rein it in for being 5 years and only 5 years was that the actors had 5-year contracts, and so it would be prohibitively expensive to renew those for more years. So that begs the question as to whether he changed from the 10-year to 5-year plan before the contracts were all signed for Babylon 5 or during the first year of Babylon 5. That's all.
Neil, you forget two salient points there. One is that Babylon 5 was always going to be a 5-year show. Then there was going to be Babylon Prime. So if you're looking for the same out that you get in Londo's narration at the beginning of The Gathering, that under the reign of its last commander, and then that Sinclair was a commander and Sheridan was a captain, that still makes sense. You've got that as an out. The other thing is, I don't think they ever signed 5-year deals for any of the actors. It was always I wish Jeffrey was here to confirm this, but it was always, a year to year.
No, I thought they mentioned that it was they had the option on them for 5 years, but for some reason Claudia's was just 4. Option, not option.
But that's a different thing. That's a different thing than signing contracts, right?
No, it's I've got first dibs on your time if this gets funded.
Right, but if you've signed a contract for 5 years and the show only runs 3 or only runs 4, I can't
until it's canceled, they're gone. I mean, I remember with Buffy and with Firefly, people actually had a contract for I think 2 years or 3 years.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, TV is weird like that.
Okay.
Hey guys, it's Joe from Anaheim. Listening to episode 214, you guys talking about technology and whether or not the Minbari ever had weapons. like guns or anything like that. I seem to recall in War Without End Part 2, when Valen shows up with B4, the Mimbari that get on the ship then had rifles. Just a little thing that I saw. I don't recall seeing it anywhere else, but I saw it there. Also, I think the Narn had guns, because we saw Jakar use it right before he was captured in Season 4. So just something to think about. We didn't see those often, but hey, just thought I'd throw that out there. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Just to be uber geeky, the Minbari in War Without End had sort of handguns. They were big old fat, heavy-looking things.
Hey, Babcast. This is Colin from San Marcos, Texas again. I got another what-if question for you to ponder. Mm. Now, I've always kind of wondered, why did the Vorlons think they needed Sheridan? During the previous Shadow War, Sinclair thought Valen was necessary because the Vorlons hadn't yet cemented their hold over the younger races. They needed someone they could relate to get everyone together and fight on their side. But by 22-8, the Vorlons really just needed to show up, take off the mask, and say, hey, everybody, I'm your divine savior. Let's do a crusade and point in a direction. Everyone would load up their guns, get in their ships, and fly where they needed them to. So I'm kind of confused. Why Sheridan? What was it about him that the Vorlons couldn't do themselves? And having chosen and tested Sheridan, why were they so surprised by his decision to become John Newcomb Sheridan and refuse to go along with anybody? Was Sheridan the fluke? Did they make a mistake? Did Koss pull a fast one on the Vorlon Empire and deliberately suggest the wrong guy for the job? Or did they maybe actually want the outcome Sheridan gave them, but they were too proud to admit it? It seems to me that the Vorlons could have united the younger species themselves, so why did they want Sheridan?
Well, the Vorlons chose Sheridan because Sinclair left the show after the first year. So they had to deal with it.
You want me to go?
Yeah, you go.
Okay.
I'll be curious what you have to say about it. Go for it.
They pointed out that Sheridan's a natural leader. Sheridan's a, what did Zothras call it? A nexus?
Sheridan, but...
Justin said it. Justin said
he was Zahadum, right.
So if the Shadows realized Sheridan's potential, of course the Vorlons are going to notice it. So his ability to lead people, they expected him to lead forces on their behalf against the Shadows. They didn't expect him to go against them. That was they didn't see it coming because, call it, you know, their arrogance. They've been around so long. They were so used to people blindly following their orders or their machinations that they were totally taken by surprise.
Yeah. To amplify that point, when you read the Technomage trilogy, it's rather explicitly stated that Kosh had something of an affinity for the younger races, and especially the humans, that other Vorlons did not share. And despite the fact that they tried to present themselves as sort of a monolithic being, we are all Kosh, the reality of it was that they weren't. And I think Kosh might have, I don't want to say manipulated or maneuvered things, but I think he realized that things needed to change and that the status quo was not worth supporting, and that Sheridan was an individual who could make that change happen, even if it led to the sacrifice of his own life.
Hey, Batcatchers, it's Gary, and I'm listening to Tim talk about his whole alternate universe viewing, and I'm not so much worried about Tim as mad at him. Tim, share these alternate viewings with us. I would really love to hear about the, you know, the true fifth season where Susan Ivanova was in it, where the Mimbari Civil War lasted 6 to 7 episodes. These are stories that I want to hear about. So I have no problem with your alternate viewing. I don't even need to know the technology you use to obtain such things. I just want to hear the stories. So share. I'll talk to you later, guys. Bye.
Well, the problem is that it only happened once, and I had to convince Drawl to open up a portal to an alternate universe, and it got shut down pretty quickly, and you know, so I don't remember a whole lot of it. And if I go back to watch those again, I'm gonna lose more hair. Wait, I already did. Okay, Gary. Well, next week I'll share with you an alternate show. So.
Hey, Babcasters, it's Gary, and I was just thinking, before you actually pull the show over and shut it down, are we ever going to discuss, like, fanfic or slashfic about Babylon 5 on the show? I was just curious. We've hit so many diverse-related topics to the show, it would seem remiss if we didn't at least touch upon something along that nature at some point before the show closes. Just food for thought. Take care, guys. Bye.
Oh, boy.
I thought Gary broached the limits of good taste with his discussion of Drazi genitalia last time, but this...
Yeah. I am willing to consider some fanfic. I am willing to consider the... what's the word I'm talking about? The phenomenon that grew up around the John and Delenn love story. I mean, I remember back in the day, there were so many fan sites for John and Delenn. I couldn't wrap my brain around it. But no slash, not going there. Gary, indulge on your own time, not going there here.
Yeah.
Damn short voicemail line. I need to start recording. Anyway, it's still Gary again, talking about the whole Psycor issue. Another side note or just food for thought is that Lita's line about, you know, the Vorlons having some different levels of weapons. I suppose I like to think that the different levels of abilities at Psycor are, in a sense, an extension of those weapon limits, in a sense, that you have so many of one level, so many of a different level, less of a higher level. And I would like to think it's probably genetic coded by the Vorlons as to the distribution of power. As a result, these high-level telepaths are very limited in number genetically. Just some food for thought, guys. Take care. Bye. Okay, voicemail line, now you can end.
which kind of makes one wonder if it's not that Lita was really any more special than any other telepath. It's just that she was the one in the right place at the right time that... You know, of course, was involved with the so-called poisoning of Kosh and the gathering that compelled her to seek out the Vorlons in Vorlon space, and then they unlocked those doomsday abilities in her. I wonder if that's something that was latent in every telepath, but they just, you know, you had to be willing to be open to letting the Vorlons do whatever it is the Vorlons would do to you to get that.
So I wonder what we would have seen had there been a Centauri telepath venturing out there, or a Minbari telepath venturing out there.
Right, exactly. Or if the Vorlons would have drawn a distinction that way.
Hey, Badcasters, I finally figured out why they have the Triluminary when they're interrogating Sinclair. It just dawned on me. You know, that Grey Council chamber is pretty dark. I'm guessing they needed a nightlight. And the Triluminary was just the easiest thing available. Well, that's my two cents. Take care, everybody. Bye.
Sure, yeah. I was going down the hall and had a flashlight in my hand, and I used it to beat this guy to death.
I got nothing.
Actually, that's a good segue. I want to read this. This is part of an email we got from Verse Andy, who is... editor for the Signal podcast, and this is his comment on that. He says, you questioned recently why the Council uses the Triluminary in Sinclair's interrogation. I'd have thought it was fairly obvious. Who created the Council? Sinclair. Who put in place the procedures they operate under? Sinclair. So who would have dictated that standard procedure when interrogating alien life forms was to use the Triluminary to test for Minbari DNA? You guessed it.
Hey, Badcasters, it's Gary, and I'm listening to Summer talk about the technology gap with laundry and new clothing. I always assumed things like uniforms and underwear were some of the things that Ivanova was talking about when she said things they couldn't get from Earth anymore. And it sounds silly, but, you know, it's an essential, that, toothpaste, stuff like that. So that's what I think she was having the smugglers bring in, uniforms, underwear, and toothpaste. That's my story, and I'll stick to it. Take care, everybody. Bye.
But not toothbrushes?
This is the Hata Bunny for Davalon Podcast. You guys were talking about the Triluminary and what function it had, and you didn't think it had very much. I was thinking about it, and it seems to be it's something they regularly put on other people. It might be able to say things like if the Vorlons had altered these people or not, the Triluminary might explain that. And I was also thinking, a Triluminary, like Luminary, being able to illuminate things. And I was wondering if it was an awful lot like maybe a tricorder from Star Trek, and it did some of the same functions with that. But I don't know. I don't see it being such a big deal that they only use something that can tell you if you're a kid of Valen or whatever. I'm pretty sure it did a lot more than that, but it just wasn't explained to us. Okay, thank you. And wow, the drugs are working. Goodbye.
Are those the same drugs that allow me to find alternate episodes of Babylon 5?
I got nothing.
Hey, Babcasters, it's John from Jersey from the Voices of Babylon and the Critical Myth Podcast. I just wanted to weigh in on Brett's question about, you know, for those who are debating Babylon 5 versus Deep Space Nine, are there people out there who watched both? And actually, yes, there was a whole group of us back in my college days when both shows were running first on the air. And, yeah, we watched both of them quite diligently. And, you know, a lot of us were Trek fans and struggled to get into B5 originally, but we watched them both at the same time. And so we watched all the episodes. And I have to say that even back then when they were running, the big difference between the two shows for us was that we clearly saw that Deep Space Nine was cribbing off of Babylon 5. There was no doubt in our minds that one was the original and the creative show, and the other one was the derivative at that point. In the end, did they both do very well? Yes, but I guess the measure of that might be that, at least on my end, when the DVDs came out for Babylon 5, I think I picked them up in about 15 nanoseconds. I still don't have Deep Space Nine on DVD. So maybe that's the telling factor, at least on my end. Talk to you later.
You know, we got quite a number of B5 versus DS9 emails and voicemails, and I did make the editorial decision to dump a number of those. Most, not that anything was really ugly, but I don't want the show to devolve to a DS9 versus B5 conversation. Not at this point, anyway. So, thanks. I mean, I don't know how to say this diplomatically without pissing people off. I mean, I'm glad people feel compelled
wait
to.
Wait a minute. You cannot start a B5 DS9 food fight and then say, I'm not going to listen to your arguments right now.
No, well, the thing is that to be frank about it, nobody was bringing anything new to the table. It's one thing to have a food fight, but when you're picking the food up off the floor and flinging it around, that's when you got to bring fresh Jell-O.
Gotcha.
After Edmund's great email about the mythology of Babylon 5, we ended up with Tim and the myth pun. I tell you, is the Vorlon going to come back, or are you going to take over the wonderful puns of being Kosh 3?
It's an incoshable job to pun that way, so I don't know how well I'm going to be able to do it. Jeffrey is a very busy Vorlon. He's off wheeling and dealing and making business happen, and I'm trying to find that email that he sent.
He's currently traveling around the country, probably on his third lap by now.
There it is. He did send an email about a Halloween special called Fright House for the DIY network.
Yep,
it aired Sunday. Sorry?
Yeah, it came on the 17th and airs again Halloween.
Yes, which was 7 p.m. It says here, it is a fun, hilarious, and oh-so-spooky show that had an absolute blast producing. I'm so grateful for my amazing production team, brilliant host, and trusting network executives for their talent, patience, and collaboration. So, make sure you guys watch that on Halloween. It says, enjoy the show and have a terrifying Halloween.
I think Halloween was this past Sunday.
No, Halloween hasn't happened yet. Oh, wait a minute.
It hasn't happened when we're recording it. Time.
Gary, there you go. There's your other alternate Babylon 5 thing.
Temporal distortion caused by podcasting and podcasting fluid. You gotta love it.
Yeah, I know, right? Okay. Mike, help me out.
Hello, this is Neil. On the road to Connecticut. I just made a CD with shows 2, 11, 12, and 13 to keep me going for the first few hours of my trip up to Connecticut right now. And I just started show 211 with a call to arms, keep geeking. And I was wanted to just thoroughly agree with Summer's opening remarks about the excitement in watching call to arms. Still feels to me in my heart as the best of the Babylon 5 movies, and I don't know whether it really was the excitement of the promise of Crusade coming up, or just it was just really a whole bunch of fun and thoroughly enjoyable, and it was great. Anyway, back to listening to the show.
Yeah, it was enjoyable. I still think my favorite is Reverse Souls. I think one of the things that was really cool about A Call to Arms was, as much as anything, a last hurrah for Sheridan and Garibaldi.
This is Neil on I-95 northbound on the way to Connecticut. I just listened to the end of show 211 with mention of Dust in The Gathering. And the thing about Dust in The Gathering is I don't think it really was. It was in the original aired Gathering. I think that whole scene about Dust was edited out of the original airing of the Gathering, and it was only later on with the newly edited version did we see the scene with Dust. So, in the show. So, on the first viewing of the show, the first time we actually saw it was later on in the series with Dust to Dust, I guess, with Dakara there. That's all.
Well, I unfortunately missed The Gathering at its first initial ever airing. I recall the Dust scene when TNT aired The Gathering when they got a hold of the series for the first time. So I can't speak to that. Summer, can you confirm or deny that with the Laserdisc?
No. Clarify that again?
Well, what he's saying is that the scene at the beginning of The Gathering where they're at the customs desk and the detector detects dust on the guy and the smuggler grabs a hostage and Sinclair goes in and talks through the situation and then tells him two rules, no weapons and no dust on my station. You can leave now, but if you come back here again, I'm going to blow you out of the sky.
Something like that, right?
Yeah, yeah. That, what he's saying is that was not in the original airing of The Gathering.
I thought that was in the original.
I can't imagine why it would not have been.
You're going to make me break out the Laserdisc, aren't you?
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
What are you doing right now?
Right this second, I'm talking to you.
Oh, okay.
This is Dale still on I-95 North. I was listening to the beginning of show 212. And I don't remember any dialogue in Call to Arms about Sheridan's 20 years, so I chalk that up to Tim's memory going somewhere. But regarding
antenna and possibly reshooting the bits and revelations with Melissa Gilbert. I'm quite sure that JMS said that he wanted to do that and was planning on doing that, and that the version that would come out on TNT and then later on DVD would have the new footage, but he never got around to doing it. So I just wanted to mention that out there. I'm sure the email post in the moderated news group bear this out and might be in asked and answered as well. But anyway, that's all. Moving on.
I thought that they talked about... I recall seeing something where he considered doing that for the DVD releases, but it wasn't. It was just a case of, yeah, it would be nice to do, but you know, not that anything ever really happened with it. Summer, do you know differently?
I'd have to go do some looking, but off the top of my head, nothing's coming to mind.
Okay.
This is Neil on I-95 now in Delaware, listening to show 212, and I just played my voicemail and was wondering why they were using the Triluminary on Sinclair in the first place. And I'm just thinking that, remember, Sinclair is the first human they've actually seen. They've never seen a human before. So it could be that the Triluminary has some genetic scanning, known genetic scanning capabilities, and they wanted to see something of what makes them tick. And that's why they were using it there with him all tied up and so forth. That's all. Going back to the show.
Yeah, the mystery of the Triluminaries.
I don't want to argue about the Triluminaries anymore. It gives me a headache.
Yeah.
This is Dale on the New Jersey Turnpike, finally in the cars only area, listening to show 213 where Gary was saying about some of his surprises, and he mentioned about the opening credits, and I just wanted to mention one thing which I think DVD only viewers of the show might have missed out, because I think they messed up with some of the opening credits on the second season. In that when it was first aired, there was, I think, in the first episode of the second season, there was the original, The Land was in that opening credits, and then they changed it after she came out of the chrysalis. That they changed the opening credits in the next episode to show the transformed The Land. And I don't think we see it changed on the DVD version. I think in the DVD version we get to see the the transformed one throughout the second season, if my memory is right. I think they messed that up on making the Masters for the DVD. Anyway, just one point that out.
Yeah, he was right. I went and checked on my second year box set, and it does show the transformed Delenn in the credits for Revelations and Points of Departure, but I have distinct memories that it was full on egghead bone Delenn that was shown in that title sequence for those two episodes.
Oh, I never had any of the original tapes, and I didn't have access to record any of the second season, record and keep the original second season broadcast. So I honestly don't remember.
I did tape off the TV, and then, of course, over time they sort of disintegrated. But yes, that's what I recall. Somebody out there want to go digging around on the interwebs and see if they can't find that opening sequence for us? That's it for all the voicemails that we've collected. I'm sure by the time you hear this episode, there's a bazillion others that have come in, so don't worry, this is not the last Feedback-a-Palooza ever.
I think to in order to keep up, we need to start at least including one.
Yeah, I know, right?
So, just at least one.
But we have some emails to take care of, so that's what we're going to do.
Okay, and we'll take a really quick break and come back and discuss the discussions that are coming our way to be discussed.
This is Mark Gunn, Celtic musician and host of the Irish and Celtic Music Podcast, with a public service announcement. Celtic versus Celtics. Though they are spelled the same way, the Celtics is a basketball team. Celtic, with a hard C, refers to the language and culture of a race of European people with an awesome style of music. Change the way you hear Celtic music with the Irish and Celtic Music Podcast at CelticMusicPodcast.com.
Emails. Where have all the emails gone? Long time. Never mind.
No. Long time, but we're getting to them, and we want to give emailers their due. So let's start into that. This is first one comes to us from Jason Farrow, who sent his first email in, and part of it is this. He says, regarding B5 profitability, he says, people still buy the DVDs. I recently bought the full DVD collection with all five series, all movies, Crusade and Lost Tales. This was to replace my complete collection on VHS tape, which I gave away to charity shortly after moving house, as I no longer had anything to play them on. Now I have the lot on DVD, and I'm rewatching and getting stuck into making feedback. The deep geeking was and is my favorite part of the show. And I guess that by show, he means Babcast. Regarding B5 religion, throughout the first season, if there was any mention of differences between them and Bari, it was always the two sides of our culture, the warrior caste and the religious caste. Even at the start of the second season, it was the same. It was only when Delenn is removed from the Grey Council that we are introduced to the third caste of workers. So how does religion work here? Is it that the warriors and workers do what they like and let the religious caste do the praying and so on for them, or does every Minbari have some religion, but the religious caste are the equivalent of our cultures, priests, rabbis, imams, etc.? And he also asks, what are the titles of the books of the Technomage trilogy and the Psycor trilogy? Well, let me answer that one first, and then we'll dig into the religion thing. Okay. For the Psycor trilogy, this is all written by J. Gregory Keyes. First book is The Birth of the Psycor. Actually, it's called Dark Genesis, Birth of the Psycor, Deadly Relations, Bester Ascendant, and Final Reckoning, The Fate of Bester. I highly recommend that trilogy. That is astounding writing all the way through. The Technomage trilogy, all written by Gene Cavellos. First one, it's all titled The Passing of the Technomages, and then the first book is Casting Shadows, second is Summoning Light, and then third is Invoking Darkness. And I also highly recommend that. That changed my opinion of the Technomages. So, anyways, so there's that. Now, regarding B5 religion, you know, with the caste system, that was like one of those shorthand kind of things that I think, I mean, they never really delved into it.
I think the thing of the religious caste being sort of the spiritual caretakers of everyone was accurate. The worker caste was actually explicitly mentioned until later. But, I mean, it was mentioned that the Grey Council was made up of, you know, it was a balance between all three castes. But it seemed to me like the warrior caste and the religious caste were arguing amongst themselves over who had the best interests of all Minbari at heart, while the worker caste was the youngest brother, or the middle brother, actually, sitting back going, yeah, right. You know, you've got the oldest arguing with the youngest, and the middle kid sitting back there on the sofa watching, just going, geez, why don't they just shut up?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know. I want to say it was not when she was kicked off. I guess she was kicked off the council in All Alone in the Night.
Oh yeah, she was kicked to the curb because they weren't, you know, she wasn't.
They wanted to make her leader of Great Council, and she turned it down, and then so they, it was an all or nothing situation. But I mean, in the gathering, it was explicitly mentioned two castes, nothing about the workers. I suspect that's one of those things that was developed as JMS was working on the show. You know, triluminary, three-sided. Oh, you know what would make sense? And not that there's anything wrong with it. I mean, that's, you know, I mean, to bring up the Star Trek elephant in the room, you know, if you watch the first season of the original Star Trek, the concept of Starfleet doesn't enter into that until they're like 15 episodes in, for what that's worth. All right, here comes another email. This is from Verse Andy again. And he writes, "The Parsecs. As a member of the Signal crew, I'm obviously really pleased to have won the Parsec Award this year. However, it actually meant a lot to me that you were one of the podcasts that we beat. Now, stick with me as I don't mean it like that. The B5 podcast was the first podcast I ever listened to. When The Lost Tales came out, I went online to see if I could find any new B5 online content." See? Warner Brothers, Lost Tales did help grow the fan base. "I stumbled onto the ISN News Zocalo Today website and from there found yourselves. It was from you that I found all of the other podcasts I listen and work on today. So to have won against a podcast of the quality of yours and the others on that list really added to the achievement. I am sorry that you guys didn't win and I hope you do so in the future." Andy, I have to say you are a very generous victor.
Oh.
And we appreciate that, but not to take away from your achievement, but we had JMS and Jerry Doyle on the show in that year. I don't know what we could do to beat that.
No. You know what? Seriously, the only thing we could do to top that is like get Daniel Dekim. I got nothing else. I got nothing.
Yeah, but that, I mean, I'd love to talk to Daniel Dekim. I actually thought about that not too long ago, but man.
Yeah, you know. JMS and Jerry Doyle.
Thank you.
In prime form.
Yes.
Jerry Doyle fired up in prime form.
Yes, exactly. So I don't know.
You know, I think literally, I think for next year, we just submit a never-ending string of Jeffrey's puns.
Yeah, maybe that's it. I mean, that was the other thing we put in there was the opening for the all-summer episode.
Oh, God.
Yeah, you weren't there, so we had three summers involved.
I remember that. That was funny.
Yeah, yeah. All right, last one here. This comes to us from Mark Heil. I hope I pronounced that right. Apparently, Penn Jillette showed up on a podcast called Geek a Week. Mark sends the link to that, so I'll have to get that posted. And apparently, Penn talks about not liking sci-fi.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Right, which is the obvious question is, Mark tweeted him to Penn Jillette. It says, Mark's tweet was, "Given your disdain for sci-fi, what led to your appearance on Babylon 5? And Penn responded. His response is, "I sure like Harlan and Neil, and I like working." Mark continues and says, "So it looks like that episode may have just been a ratings stunt, and Penn and Teller were asked to appear and not the other way around. I think Penn and Teller were doing their Sin City TV show at the time, so maybe there was some cross-promotion as well." I don't recall any cross-promotion. I don't know what the Sin City TV show was. That wasn't on TNT, was it?
I have no idea what that was.
Yeah, I don't know. No, I mean, I don't have my script book here in front of me, but as I recall, Penn and Teller wanted to be on that show.
You know, I will go dig up, because I have, now I have two, the script from Dream Painted Books that Neil Gaiman signed. I will take another look at that, because I think there are some notes in there, too. But I know Teller is a sci-fi fan. He's really big into horror and zombies, actually.
Right, so we're, you know,
I'm confused.
I am too, but, you know, I mean, anyways. Well, that's it for our emails for...
That's it? That's all?
Yeah, that's it.
Okay. So you realize we're probably going to have a special forum for B5 versus DS9 to make up for all of the people who you just said you dumped their voice.
Yeah, so there you go.
Oh my goodness. That's funny. Well, if you want to send in your own emails for Tim to read every fifth show, that email address is BabylonPodcast@gmail.com. Also, come by the website. Add your comments to some of the discussions going on there. That website is BabylonPodcast.com. And if you're feeling so inclined, click on the orange button and donate to Farpoint Media so we can keep the bandwidth flowing. That's my statement for this month. Keep the bandwidth flowing.
Podcast fluid flowing.
Bandwidth's more important. I lost my train of thought. My brain blank. I've never blanked like that before. Farpoint Forums. Farpointforums.com. Go over there. Contribute the never-ending stream of consciousness thoughts flowing for Babylon Podcast, Slice of Sci-Fi, Dragon Page, all of your favorite Farpoint Media shows, and of course the voicemail line. If you can get in between, that number is 206-338-2259. That's 206-338-2259.
The year 15 more voicemails rolled in while he did this show.
And we'll see you next time on the other side of the still.